Welcome to the Wildlife Gardener podcast. My name is Thomas Nutt, and today I would like to talk about planning a herbaceous border so it's beautiful for you but also beneficial and attracts all the wildlife around you and gives them a real boost to their natural environment. So the traditional idea of a herbaceous border is a bed or border made up of perennials which will come up in the spring and die down again for winter. And then also a structure of shrubs throughout the border, and it's usually organised in quite a hierarchical sort of scaled height order. But that sort of evolved over time, and now the modern sort of idea of a herbaceous border has become much more naturalistic, and you can see this at Chelsea. It's a lot freer, and you can sort of see the movement, and grasses are definitely being brought in. And I think there is a sort of a yearning to connect to the landscape more now in gardening. So I think it's more natural shapes of flowers, and that's obviously going to be positive for pollinating insects, as they'll have easier access to drink the nectar and pollinate the flowers. So I think that's definitely a plus side of progression in gardening. And I'm particularly inspired by Dan Pearson and his sort of design style. I think it really gives the sort of garden life. Even the plants, they feel, obviously they're alive, but they feel like they have motion because it's all sort of quite taller and towering above you. I think it's just quite beautiful, and I really find inspiration from that. Gardens that I'm particularly inspired by is definitely Sissinghurst, as so many others are too, which was a garden created by Vita Sackville-West, and it really sort of created the idea of compartmentalising a garden and creating garden rooms. And I think it's just sort of stuck with me, and I do find it quite a sort of a really beautiful structured way of gardening. But I also feel like as I'm getting older, I'm not that old, but I'm only 18, but throughout my sort of experience of gardening, which has been most of my life, I felt like the recent few years, I've been drawing almost away from that sort of structured, colours need to be in one place, and that's drawn me to other inspirations, such as Great Dixter, which was a garden created by the garden writer Christopher Lloyd, and is now managed by the head gardener, Fergus Garrett. And I've watched lots of lectures by Fergus Garrett, and I find it really amazing how the biodiversity is so rich in that beautiful garden, and the colour schemes aren't sort of constricted. It's just things are allowed to flow, and it has a sort of life to it, and I just think that's amazing. And it's just so innovative, using native grasses even in herbaceous borders, and it's just always pushing the boundaries of what to expect. I think that's quite special, and almost what we have to do in all sort of conservation and anything. We have to push the boundaries, because it isn't working at this point. Otherwise we wouldn't be seeing these catastrophic design declines in species numbers. So I think it's just some an ethos that's really important in this time and sort of culture of the world. So the steps you need to go through when you are creating a herbaceous border, you need to start by really precisely measuring it, and that might sound really obvious, but I have in the past just thought, oh no, I can just work it out, I can sort of sketch it by hand, and you can up to a point, but you really want to make it exact and then look at the measurements of the plants and make sure it all fits together. And otherwise you may have too little of the plants that you need, or you might order too many or propagate too many. So you want to just make sure that you really are precise, and it will just mean that you have more control over everything. Then once I've got my sort of structure drawn, I will start by putting the most structural pieces in. So I really love using topiary, which was definitely inspired by Arnie Maillard and his sort of style of garden design, and Tom Stuart Smith also, who use large or smaller also, but predominantly large pieces of topiary to ground the more light, airy, tall herbaceous planting around. And I think it's quite lovely seeing that difference. And it's also a really good habitat for nesting birds, and they can be good for moths to lay their eggs on and butterflies. So you could use hawthorn topiary, for example, which can look really beautiful. And that's obviously an excellent resource. It has flowers if you don't trim it too hard. So it will have flowers in May, and you know, it will just offer lots of resources. So you can modify things to make them more wildlife friendly. Then add in the most dominant plants. So maybe starting with grasses, and grasses like Calamagrostis can be really good for hedgehogs to nest in because they're quite dense and hibernate in. So that's a really good positive. And just think of other really important sort of large plants like that you want to be sort of permanently in there and not sort of shifted around a lot. Then think about the larger perennials and the smaller perennials and choose open shapes and lots of different shapes to accommodate different pollinators. Some really good ones are Persicaria. I love poppies, oriental poppies, even though they're a short show. They are just so beautiful, and they really sort of encapsulate the beginning of spring and sort of leading into summer, really, for me. Also, phloxes are really great. They're a lovely sort of staple and quite old-fashioned. I quite love that, and the scent is beautiful. And they're really, really good for hummingbird hawk moths. And I think that's just quite a lovely thing because I've seen them increasingly over the years as their range is spreading due to climate change. They're definitely becoming more prevalent species, so you can really support them. And just think about lots of other ones that you can provide for, like different thistle species like Sirsium, and other different flat-headed sorts like Achilleas will be really good for hoverflies. So you can really think about different things. I'm really in love at the moment with Thalictrums. They just have this beautiful grace, and apparently they're also really, really good for hoverflies. So I'm really excited to see that, because I planted quite a few in the garden this year. So next year, hopefully, we'll have a really good show of them. And then something to think about, which definitely I've been inspired from Great Dixter, is letting in self-seeders and just letting them sort of roam. Obviously, if they take over, you need to sort of manage that. But I think it's quite special to have that, something just lacing its way through a border, adding another texture, a sort of constant texture around all the more flamboyant flowers. I would definitely recommend using native plants, and I've definitely done that in most of the beds and borders around my garden. I have probably a few different types of native wildflowers planted, either sowed directly, direct sowed onto the bed, or put in plugs or seedlings, or more mature plants. And some of these can be cow parsley. It is quite invasive, but it is just so beautiful. And I think it's just, for me, it's one of my favourite wildflowers, even though it is a bit of a thug. And it can seed everywhere, and it's got sort of deep taproot. But it is just so beautiful, and I think it's just the sign of spring, and I just love it. Primroses are an obvious one, and they are excellent early nectar source for queen bumblebees that will be coming out at that time. All the different sorts of campions, white campion and red campion, are just lovely and great for the bees. Oxeye daisies are just lovely and have quite a sort of a good mid-season of flowering. Foxgloves are just beautiful and great for long-tongued bumblebees. Hesperus, which is just beautiful and is spoken about in William Shakespeare's writing, it just exudes this most beautiful scent in the evenings. I just love it so much. I'm going to be definitely introducing more of it into the garden. But it's excellent for moths, as you can imagine, because of its night scent. And others like opium poppies, when I have them self-seeding around the garden, they're just beautiful. And there can be as many as five or more bumblebees in one at one time. So they're really, really amazing to watch. And it's just a whole sort of world going on inside that flower. And obviously, field strawberries are really lovely, our native strawberry that will just lace its way through a border and sort of be a sort of understory. And it's also really good for suppressing more invasive weeds. I think it's just really pretty, and you can harvest some of the the berries, obviously, and they're also really good for small mammals because they will come and eat some of the berries. And it's also just another story, like a sort of a rainforest effect, almost having another level in the border. And introducing annuals, which you can sow every year, and it's a cheaper way of having a really high impact sort of pocket in the border, can be things like cosmos, which are just fabulous for bees and other pollinators, larkspur, ami majus, and ami vicinari. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. They're more sort of tame versions of cow parsley if you're worried about them taking over, and cerinthe, which can be sowed really, really early on. It can be sowed in the autumn and then planted out throughout the winter because it's very hardy and will be one of the first things to flower. And it's this beautiful sort of little tubes of flower which are touched with purple, and sort of the purple sort of leaks into the leaves. It's beautiful. I really like to incorporate bulbs that also really pack a border full of bulbs, as I think it's just the most amazing thing, having these just jewels which just emerge through all the lovely mounding foliage, especially snowdrops. You could have them sort of going running through a border, and then just have a succession, having tulips, which if you have sort of sandier soil, well-draining soil, which will do really well. I have quite a clay soil where I live, so I always will plant them very deep and then put quite a considerable amount of grit at the bottom of the hole to stop them from rotting. And I think that will really help if that's something you're having a problem dealing with. Alliums are also really, really good and great for honeybees. And when you're thinking about sort of like holistically how you're going to be treating and caring for the border, people are obviously going to be worrying about pests. And I completely understand that people get stressed about having pests, seeing aphids on things, but I've really learned to sort of step back and know just to let things be, because you'll see a patch of lots of aphids one day, and then the next day there'll be a ladybird feasting on them, and then there could be even a lacewing, or you could have hoverfly larvae, and you're providing that prey for that creature that will in turn produce more of itself, and then we'll be able to eat the prey of like aphids and other pests off other plants. So you need to let your garden sort of reach an equilibrium, and I think that's really, really important, as otherwise you're just going to be dousing your garden in pesticides, and it's just going to have detrimental effects for your plants also, but also for the pollinators and everything that you're going to really enjoy to see in the garden. Something that I like to do, because I think beetles are something that are quite ignored in gardening and possibly in wildlife gardening, but they are so important, and also they are really, really good at pest control, because they eat slugs more than hedgehogs are reported to eat slugs. And beetles are also the prey of hedgehogs, predominant prey of hedgehogs. And that's why in the hedgehog poo, you'll see little shiny, reflective pieces of beetle backing their exoskeleton. So, you know, you just really need to think about what their natural prey is of other larger animals. And beetles are really, really important for that. So you can leave dead wood buried in the border, laying on the border, and it'll sort of really encourage ground beetles. And then once the foliage of all the plants will just take over it, you won't notice it's there, and it will just have an extra dimension to the border and just offer something else that maybe wouldn't be there naturally. Well, it would be there naturally, but wouldn't be there naturally as a gardener who would want to tidy things up. And talking of tidying things up, you need to really let go, and when it starts to die back in the autumn and winter, don't go in straight away with the secateurs and shears and sort of whatever you use to cut back your borders with, and just let it sort of die away and sort of hollow out the stems and everything become a bit sort of rank. And I think there's quite a lot of beauty in the decay. You've seen it blossom and look beautiful throughout the summer and spring, and I think you need to appreciate it in its other life, and I think that's quite important to sort of connect you to the seasons. So I leave mine, my borders all till March, which is when you cut them down, and then you can compost the waste, and throughout the winter you'll just see such a lot of life that will benefit from it, such as insects which will hibernate in the hollow stems, and birds will be coming and eating from seed heads. Like if you have teasel in the bed, the goldfinches will just love that, and you'll just have this other dimension, and you'll be able to offer something so much better. And then in the spring, those predators like lacewing, ladybirds that have been hibernating there wouldn't have been killed off by you removing their habitat for hibernation, and they'll be able to rebound a lot quicker and then deal with the influx of aphids. And then other points of care. So after you've taken out the, in March, you've chopped down the old parts of the plant, you can mulch with a organic compost, which you make yourself from those pieces you've taken off the border, and obviously other things like grass clippings and other things you'll be having from your garden that otherwise would just be wasted, put in a green bin. And you can really make beautiful compost at home and spread that on the border, and then worms will be able to bring it in, creating channels into the soil, and it'll improve the soil structure, the plants will grow better, and all around your border will just be so much more positively impacted by you doing that. As you don't just want to think about what's above ground, think about what's below ground and what you can do to really help and improve the microbiome of the soil. One really important tip is to stake your herbaceous plants early, because they can grow quite leggy sometimes, and depending on the conditions especially. Definitely stake early, because you'll be not lifting up things which have been flopping over and will sort of looking a little bit bedraggled. You can be preemptive about it and mean that they'll grow a lot better, and probably will have a better show of flowers or whatever they're offering. So it's just a really good tip just to try and get in there early. And deadheading also to prolong the flowering period will also be lovely for you, because you'll have a longer period of flowers if those flowers are to be deadheaded, and they will repeat flowering. You do your research whether they will. And obviously you will have more nectar for the insects. But also don't deadhead everything, because you want to leave some seed heads there for birds, and just don't be too manicured about everything. Plant with smaller plants, I think, is a really important thing. Rather than getting a sort of instant garden, definitely go for smaller plants, grow your own. It's a lot cheaper, and I do believe that it's quicker to establish. If you planted a 9 centimetre plant, in a 9 centimetre pot, or one in a 1 litre pot or 2 litre pot even, and I guarantee that those smaller plants will establish a lot quicker, because they don't have such sort of larger amount of compost to grow into inside the pot, and it means they'll just be more prone to their roots spreading out and exploring into the soil. And I just think you'll have a healthier plant that will live longer and be healthier in the long run. Planting a border more densely can be really beneficial, as it can help suppress the growth of weeds. I hate saying the word weeds, because they are wildflowers, predominantly, apart from some invasive weeds. However, in this context, if you plant them closer, you'll have less sort of invasive weed growth, and that will benefit the plants you're trying to grow, and they will be able to flourish and sort of hold each other up, and means that you'll have to do less maintenance on the border. And I do enjoy weeding, and it's also quite good to have green matter to put onto the compost. However, you want to give those plants the best chance they have, and having the weeds growing around them will mean that they'll take nutrients away, and you want to really give them all the energy they can so they can grow and be really healthy and dense and give a really good impact, and also have good flowers which will give lots of nectar to the pollinating insects. Always water in your new plants. I once planted up a border which was raining so hard, and I was completely soaked, but I was determined to get it done, and I still watered each plant in, because I think it's really important to really give them a good drink when they're just being introduced, because it will just sort of remove any air bubbles and will just really help to make them have better contact with the soil. And then don't do so much water and sort of slowly taper out the watering. And I really don't like to water my borders at all, because I think it's better to sort of keep them on their toes almost, and they need to rely on the water coming naturally and not from an artificial source, as you don't want to be wasting too much water, and it's just a lot better for the environment, for your water wastage. Of course, if you're using water that's rainwater coming from water butts and things, I think that's really great, and if a plant really needs it. But otherwise, if you overwater and then you don't water at all, that plant is going to be expecting it, and their roots will be very close to the surface of the soil, rather than encouraging them to put really strong root systems down. So thank you so much for listening, and I hope this has given you some inspiration about creating a herbaceous border, which is also beneficial for wildlife and yourself. So I hope you can all tune in next time for my next episode.